Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet, one person at a time. So I'm super thrilled to have a repeat guest today. I have Dina Merriam with us, and she's been on my show before and was really, really enjoyed her last time she was here. She's just got a new book called The Untold Story of Sita, An Empowering Tale for Our Time. And in her experience, I mean, her bio is like ridiculously impressive and also makes me happy because she's so works so hard for peace in the world. She is the founder and convener of the Global Peace Initiative for Women and has really worked hard her entire life to bring together people of various spiritual faiths and traditions to bring sort of this ecumenical peace together so that we can all kind of be on the same page in the same time. And she's fantastic. So welcome back to the show, Dina.
Oh, so happy to be here, Lisa. Thank you for having me again.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have you. And this book is, you know, is so wonderful. It's so magical and powerful. It has some really incredible themes that are so relevant right now. This theme of the divine masculine feminine healing and how we caretake and curate spiritual knowledge and how we pass it on and how we live in the highest vibration we can with the planet that we're living on. So I'm wondering if you could just tell us about how this book came to you.
Well, the book, I've since my early adult life, I've always had a tremendous devotion to Ram and Sita. And for Westerners who may not know them, they are the, you know, really foundational figures in Indic civilization for India. They're historical figures, but Ram is considered to be an incarnation of the divine, as Sita is considered to be an incarnation of the divine. And they had a very important role at a time in history during a transition from a higher era, moving down into a less conscious era. And the story has got many, many aspects to it, but I read the classical version of it when I was in my early 20s. And then when I was in India, I went on a pilgrimage just about 3 years ago to where some of the story took place, this small temple town called Ayodhya, which was Ram's kingdom. And as soon as I got there, I mean, it's a very, very small town today, at the side of a river, lots and lots of temples. I felt myself drawn back in time, as I've happened to me numerous times before. And I found myself in another era. And for the next period of months, every time I'd sit in meditation, I'd be back in time, experience myself within this story of Ram and Sita, and seeing scenes and hearing stories. And so I just began to record what I was seeing and hearing. And after many, many months, I looked at it and I said, "Why, this is a whole other way of looking at the story." Many of the facts of this, the outer story is the same. Mm-hmm. Sita marries Ram. They're sent on exile through the forest. Sita's kidnapped. So the outer story is the same. But what was happening at a deeper level on the inner plane just really was a wake-up call for me. And I saw that so much of the story had been watered down and diluted over the many millennia, because this takes place 4,000 or 5,000 years BCE, and that there was a whole other way to understand the story, especially had a lot of relevance to our time, because many people feel that we're in a transition now, not moving into a lower age, but moving into an age of higher consciousness. Mm-hmm. So as they were in a descending time where there was a loss of consciousness about the higher realms and the higher realities, there seems to be a gain at this point where we're coming back to recover knowledge that has been lost. So I think that there are many, many aspects, but there are many, many reasons why it's important to take another look at that story, which is really an important story for everyone, regardless of whether you're in the East or West, Hindu or not Hindu. I think there's a lot of a learning that can take place and inspiration to come from that story. And Sita, I began to see in a whole different light, whereas the traditional story is really centered on Ram, I saw Sita as an equal partner in the unfolding of the narrative.
It really reminded me of, you know, the myths of Avalon, which is sort of that feminist twist mm-hmm. on the Arthurian mm-hmm. legend, and that story told from the viewpoint of all the women in the story. And I feel like, it looks sort of different when you tell it that way. And I felt like you, in a way, did the same thing with this story, including her, Sita, including her side of it, and equalizing them as partners. And it seems so powerful right now to do that, because we're in this sort of time when we're really trying to bring the divine feminine back, to balance the masculine and feminine. And I know that's an important part of this story.
It's a critical time, because at the time that Sita lived was a pre-patriarchal. So there were many women sages, women had received education, there were women lived as hermits in the forests. Sita herself travels with Ram through the jungles for 14 years. So women had a lot of freedom of movement, much more than a few hundred years after that, when the patriarchy became much more the prevailing, you know, the dominant force. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to look back. And Sita herself was a very strong figure, and the story could not have unfolded as it did without her participation. So it's interesting, and I see the gender balance as very linked to the ecological balance.
Right.
We can't really separate them. You know, the disharmony that we've created in the natural world is mirrored in the disharmony that we have, you know, the imbalance between the genders. So to balance one, we have to balance the other. They have to be done holistically together.
Right. So we it'd be interesting to talk about the yugas, these, you know, periods or phases of human evolution and development, that there was the matriarchy, then there was the patriarchy, and now there's more the unity. So
that's what we have to work toward, the unity.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so I hear what you're saying is, you know, as if we're going to restore the planet, we have to balance the male and female energy, the female energy, the mother energy, the energy of Sita, is that sort of preserving, life-giving, life-sustaining energy that we're lacking right now. And that's sort of, we're running down the planet that way.
It's self-destruction.
Yeah.
Unless we can evolve toward an understanding of this, that this is essential for life,
right.
Balancing, the ecological balance, regaining that, and then creating this gender balance within ourselves and then within society.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's, you know, the people know that there's so much going on at this time. You know, it's like it's everything is kind of coming to a head,
mm-hmm.
and I think that it's important to remember that we are moving into a time of awakened consciousness, and that's why we see the things that are kind of left over from a denser consciousness time are falling apart, because they're not able to reflect the higher consciousness that we're moving into. So you see this transformation going on, and it can be frightening to people, and people cannot, you know, not know what's going on, and things seem to be getting worse, but they're not getting worse. It's just all coming to the fore right now.
Yeah, that's kind of my feeling too. It's like things are coming, like you said, coming to a head, or the worms are coming out of the woodwork, you know, so we can really...
Yeah.
So in this revelation process, do some healing work and make some decisions. Because I think that as weird as things are, there's also incredible opportunities for conversation, for talking about things, for healing. as the worms come out of the woodwork.
And I think that there's a lot of people are waking up. I mean, You know, you don't see it just looking at the surface kind of stuff. You look at the political system, you look at the media, it's not apparent there.
Right.
But at the grassroots level, you know, when you see that this, especially among younger people, there's definitely a lot of movement. And, you know, when I was younger, the environmental movement, I was interested, you know, I was drawn to the environmental movement, and of course my main interest and activity was in the spiritual, but they were separate. They were not together. Environmentalists had very little patience with the spiritual people, and, you know, spiritual people just thought, well, you should just go meditate. And now it's all come together. Mm. We work with a lot of environmentalists in my organization, and most of them have a spiritual practice.
Wow.
And most of them understand that without a spiritual practice, they won't be able to be effective. And that was a real revelation. It's like, oh my God, that's a big shift. That's a big change.
Yeah, and right in the nick of time.
Yeah,
and it makes sense to me, like, when you talked about, like, how this process is, like, we're having this awakening, this spiritual awakening, and when we get to a certain level of awakening that we know that we are all one, and I can't hurt you without hurting me, and I can't hurt me without hurting you, and I can't hurt the world without hurting all of us, that's when environmentalism and spiritual come together.
You know, yeah. I mean, people use the word interconnected very loosely today, but that's what that means. It means that you hurt one part of the body, the whole body suffers. I mean, even if your toe is broken, the whole body feels it. You know, you can't isolate the toe and ignore it. The whole body is affected by it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the whole body of the earth is affected by any one piece is out of kilter. Mm-hmm. And you know, we speak about interconnection without really understanding and saying, aha, you know, that's why we have to care. We have to care about everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, it is amazing. And I was very, I don't know, just really moved by your personal connection with Sita that you talk about, and the way that you write about her and sort of embody her. I felt like, I don't know, like, really grateful, actually, for you to write this, to give her, like, a voice, in a way, to give her a modern voice, you know? And I wonder if you could talk about that. Like, what, I know you said that she sort of became, like, the embodiment of the Divine Mother, Divine Feminine, that you really could relate to in a very intimate way.
Well, I experienced her, you know, as a very personal and real relationship. And as I go through the story, I mean, here I experienced myself as a servant in the household. And yet it was a time when there was dignity to every position. Nobody was looked down upon. Nobody was treated any less or any more. Everyone, there was of course, this was in a more spiritually advanced age. So there was that understanding that everybody, their karma brought them into that position for a certain learning. But then their next life, they could be in another position for a certain learning. So that was like a given understanding. So Sita, when I began to experience her, I mean, I would hear some of the words in the book, where I would just hear them coming from her. And she became a living reality to me. And that was, as did Ram, actually. And I began to see Ram in a very different way, because the love, I mean, as I say at the beginning of the book, what struck me as I started this process was the intense love that they both manifested on Earth. And that, to me, that is the simple message of the book, love. Because Sita expressed love toward the rivers, toward the animals, toward the forest, toward the plant life. I mean, she knew all the plants, which is why they were able to survive for 14 years just wandering through jungles, because she knew the medicinal plants, she knew the roots, she knew, because they spoke to her. I mean, there was this unity with nature, so that you, from inside, just knew where to look and what was beneficial. But she did become a living reality to me, and I got to see the role of the Shakti. You know, the Shakti is this energy of the universe that expresses itself in the feminine form, that is essential for transformation and for movement, really. And the masculine and feminine just work in such harmony in that ideal state. And that's when things are in balance. And that's what is needed for the well-being of it all, to be in balance. And so it was, you know, Sita still is a presence with me. And I'm very grateful for that. So at the end, I didn't care whether it was a past life recall or whether I was channeling somebody from that time. The important thing for me was that I was in the presence of Sita and Ram and got this deep understanding of so many things.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Like, I think you really kind of walk this line in a way between past life recall and channeling, and, you know, was it a past life memory? Were you channeling? And how you came to the conclusion that it doesn't really matter, that the information was flowing through you in this way that it does, and that it's probably both. You know,
I think it's both, and there were just many messages that came to me. You know, at one point when Sita, she's about to give up her physical body, and one of the other servants who had been very, very loyal to and faithful to her, you know, is in despair that Sita's going to leave her physical form, and Ram is there with her. And this thought comes into the servant's mind and says, you know, she calls him Mata, Mother, you're leaving this world. And Sita turns to her. She knows the thought in her mind and says to her, how can I leave this world when I am the world?
That's beautiful.
Yeah, so there were things like that came to me, and I said, you know, just think deeply about what that is. The Divine Mother is the world, is the whole, you know. We can find her anywhere and in everything.
I know, and I really loved what was so touching to me. And just by the way, like, a box of hankies when you read this book might be something that you want to have. Because I was like crying through the whole thing. And it wasn't because it was so really sad. It was just so touching. And that the love thing was so present. It's so, like, the love that they both embody, the divine masculine and the divine feminine. And the way that you described their relationship to each other was so sweet. It was so sweet.
Yeah.
And I was sort of paying attention to it, like, oh, is this what a godly relationship is like, or a conscious relationship? Is it possible to have that kind of relationship if you're not, you know, a divine, you know, avatar? I don't know. What can you say about that?
It's the ideal, you know. I mean, we're always presented with ideals so that we can aspire toward them. And of course, you know, we fall short, but that's the ideal that we aspire toward. And I have to mention that in the traditional telling of the story, at the end of the story, when they return after Sita's been kidnapped and the war takes place, the traditional story is that Ram banishes her because society demands it, because she's been away for a year away from him and another, you know, he's kidnapped. And I never bought that part of the story. It's the last chapter. I never bought that. And that never made sense to me. And then after I wrote this book and I saw that, no, Sita was never banished by Ram because he's the essence of Dharma. And how could he commit an adharmic act? This woman who had no thought of herself, devoted herself to humanity, was, you know, taken into the demon kingdom, and then, you know, is freed. And how would he banish her into the woods, you know, to abandon her, especially when she's pregnant? I mean, think about that. A husband banishes his wife when she's carrying his child. So I saw it, the way I saw it was that Sita chooses to go into the forest to raise her sons, in part to fulfill an ancient curse, but also in part so that they would grow up not in palaces, but they would grow up in the forest as she did in her kingdom and know the life of the forest. But after that, several scholars, Swami scholars that I know, when I discussed this with them, they said, of course, that part was added. It's different stanza. It's totally different from the rest of the book. So that part was later addition. Wow. So then I thought to myself, why did somebody feel the need to have Ram banish Sita as a message to society? That was clearly in, you know, centuries later, after the, you know, in a more darkened time, when they wanted to teach women a lesson, you stay away from your husband, you're going to be banished.
Or it's
Look,
probably
even
why,
Satan was banished.
Like why Mary Magdalene, poor Mary Magdalene, had to end up as a prostitute for the same.
Exactly.
Reason.
Exactly. So it's,
yeah.
You know, how society twists these things in order to give a very particular message, which is an adharmic message. I mean, it's against that, you know, the higher laws of the universe. So, so that was a really, and you know, this book now has been launched in India, and it's, I'm sure, going to create, you know, how people are going to feel about it, because it's so deep in the psyche.
Yes.
That Sita, and village women, they sing the Sita blues, you know, Sita's banished and all that. And it was like people have internalized this message.
Mm. Wow. It's so beautiful. And I just wanted to bring up the word dharma because you talked about that, and I don't know if everyone who's listening understands that. And Ram has a very important role in this concept of dharma. He was sort of the originator of the concept of dharma, and understanding dharma as the expression of love, of our love here on the planet, not some like, you know,
duty,
exactly, or you know, get out of jail kind of, like, this is what you have to do to get off the planet kind of thing. So maybe you can talk just a little bit about that.
Yeah, people have come to see dharma as duty. So it was his dharma to do what he did. But dharma really means, I think the roots of the word are to uphold the highest truths of the universe. Mm-hmm. And the highest truth of the universe is love. I mean, the foundation of it all is love. Love is the strongest force in the universe. It can overcome anything. And so that was the essence of who he was. And everything, all the institutions, so it was a time in social development where agriculture was being developed, cities were being formed, trade was expanding, and institutions had to be set up for justice, education, all these different things that are the foundation of a society. And it was in the early stages of doing that. And his role was to set all of these institutions up on the foundation of dharma, so that education would be education based on dharma. You'd be teaching ethics. You'd be teaching spiritual laws such as cause and effect, and you know, and honoring the natural, the deities of the natural world. So that was the education, and the justice system was also based on understanding the laws of cause and effect, and maintaining balance in a society. So this foundation of dharma was to mean balance in all different levels of society, a balance with the ecosystem, balance with the gender balance between the different roles in society, between those who ruled and those who created business and those who served. It was creating a society of balance. So that was the main, you know, one of the central roles of both of them was helping this concept of dharma permeate the whole society.
How can people get your book? And also, can you talk a little bit about your foundation, the Peace Initiative?
Mm-hmm. So the book is on Amazon. You can get it in paperback or in the Kindle on Amazon. It's called The Untold Story of Sita, An Empowering Tale for Our Time. And my organization, the Global Peace Initiative of Women, we organize, we're focusing a lot right now on ecology, ecological balance, and regeneration. How to create regenerative societies, looking at climate change, and we have a series called The Inner Dimensions of Climate Change, because the climate, the outer climate and the inner climate are connected. So
yeah.
You can't look at the outer climate without looking at the inner, what's going on in the inner life of our society. So we work a lot with young people in their 20s and 30s, young ecologists, to help them build the spiritual foundation so that they can understand their work in a different light. So we have a website. It's the initials of the organization, GPIW, Global Peace Initiative of Women.org. And we're on Facebook and Twitter, Instagram, all the social media. And we are excited, actually, because we've we've actually organized these gatherings of young ecologists around the world and see how many of them now are spiritually grounded and really looking to a much more balanced future and see their work as the work of regeneration, of, you know, in all aspects, in forests, in agriculture, looking at, you know, new ways of community living, of really beginning to form the infrastructure, the foundation for a society of the future. And I think we all have to focus on the future, on creating these societies of the future.
Thank you so much for being on the show with me today, Dina. It was fabulous to speak with you again, and good luck with your book and also with your peace initiative.
Thanks, Lisa. It was great to talk to you.
Bye-bye. And thanks, bye, honey. And thanks all of you guys for being here. You can find me on my website, lisacampion.com. Drop by anytime. I got a lot of free stuff for you on my website. And just want to thank you from my heart to you for joining us today on The Miracle of Healing, where we are healing the planet one person at a time, right here on Empower Radio.